Time now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Welcome on in to News 4 Utah Plus today. This is our free TV streaming app. Whether you have Apple, Amazon Fire, or Roku, we're glad you're finding us. Maybe you're watching us on YouTube. We're glad you're there as well. Want to introduce my panelists today, Taylor Morgan, Liam Murray. Hi, guys. How was the holiday?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Hope you had a very Merry Christmas.
It was a merry holiday. I went to Georgia.
Very nice.
Whenever I go to the South, I instantly just get like all fascinated by American history. I don't know why.
Does your hair get poofy?
Yes. And I feel like I had Hamilton like stuck in my head for like the better part of a week. I don't know, just the Southern states. And I don't know, I just get fascinated by it. We do need to start by talking about the biggest political story of the year. Kyle Whittingham going to Michigan. I mean, are we okay? Are we okay?
He's never going to recover from that.
Are we okay, Taylor? How we do we have feelings?
A lot of feelings.
Okay.
It's been a rough week.
How's it going? Is it the fact that he's leaving? Is it the fact he's taking others with him? Do you not think Morgan Scalley can build the culture?
But I want to ask this question. Did you believe him? How did he say, "There, if kids go in the portal, then I will talk to them"? I can't remember what the words he was using, but he wasn't trying to persuade students now to come with him. And then the question kind of is, like, do we believe that's happening?
The portal officially opens on Friday, January 2nd. John Henry Daly already earlier today posted Instagram saying he's in the portal, likely going to Texas A&M Michigan.
It is going to be a disaster. Dan Pierre. What about Dan Pierre?
Likely going with Kyle Whittingham. Depends on what Bryce Underwood does. Bryce Underwood is a rich man's Devin Dambier, I believe. Also depends on if Jason Beck,
what about Bert
coordinator
Ficklin?
Utah, goes with Whittingham. If Jay Hill also goes with Whittingham. None of that. That is not official yet.
Oh, I thought Jay Hill was official.
Not official yet. Okay. I think Kalani Sitake at BYU is trying to keep him. We'll see what happens if there's enough cookie money to do it. Also, BYU offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick could also end up maybe at Utah as Utah's new offense. Listen, we don't have enough time to talk about all of the movement here in college football. It's going to change daily. Maybe we get to it next week.
Are you now a Michigan fan, Taylor Morgan?
Yeah.
Let's go to the big house.
Yes.
Let's go. Sure. And let's just embrace our Utah roots in Michigan.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Family. I will always cheer for Kyle Whittingham.
Family trip.
Always.
All right. You're a good sport. We know you have feelings about things. Okay, but let's dive into another really actually and serious this time, a big political story.
He is the highest paid state employee, or he was, right? So it is a significant Utah political story. Perhaps,
that's how I do this.
We're saving some time.
Perhaps the legislature might have additional funds this session
because of
Kyle's departure.
It's no longer a socks and underwear year. So Jerry Stevenson, you better be listening. We can take that salary and put it towards some good. Okay, we got to talk about the latest in redistricting because the day after Christmas, Judge Diana Gibson came out with the latest ruling in the redistricting case. I wrote this article before Christmas that the lawyers were battling back and forth about a final judgment here. And if you're not keeping score at home, it's okay. We are so in the weeds of this case. But here's the latest is the judge came out and said, so the legislature asked the judge for a final ruling right now, or a final judgment. Right now she has issued a couple of injunctions and ordered a new map, but the case isn't finalized yet. There are still some outstanding claims that have not been resolved, so she couldn't certify the case. And the legislature's like, we want to appeal on the whole case. Let us do this. The substantive issues have been decided here, at least preliminarily, so let us appeal this case to the Utah Supreme Court. And the judge was like, look, you have had a chance to appeal this entire case since August when the first ruling came out saying you weren't allowed to overturn Proposition 4, the anti-gerrymandering law. And then again in November when the judge, you know, said you didn't follow Prop 4 when you redistricted and she picked, you know, the plaintiff's map and instituted that. So, guys, I need to know your take here. Is this a tactic from the legislature not to appeal via these interlocutory decisions, or is this a legal strategy to try and maybe build a bigger case? What do you think's going on here?
I think it is a legal strategy. I think it always has been. I think the Utah legislature wants a final ruling from Judge Gibson in order to have the strongest possible case for appeal before the Utah State Supreme Court and perhaps the federal Supreme Court. Of course, having the map, getting that in November was big. The legislature believes that strengthened their case for appeal. They have asked for a stay, and that was denied.
Right.
Right. But they have not appealed because I think, my opinion, right, I'm not speaking on behalf of the legislature or their attorneys, but just putting the pieces together, it appears as if the legislature wants a complete case to appeal. And a big part of this is the state Supreme Court's ruling last July, creating essentially a super law, saying that the legislature could not touch initiatives passed by the voters. Ultimately, that's at the heart of all of this.
Okay. So the issue for them is not more important, the map that they're going to be using in 2026, more important for the legislature than is super law authority.
I believe that's at the heart of it. Yeah. Although, of course, in the special session, they created time in the congressional election timeline if they were to get the map tossed.
Okay, and so you're saying the judge picking a map drawn by the plaintiffs for them is evidence that initiatives are amok and we should be able to touch them because look at what we get when we don't? Is that what you're saying?
I think that's a big part of it. Yeah, that's
okay.
In my opinion, at least, I think it's a compelling argument. I don't think Judge Gibson has actually ruled yet if there was gerrymandering in the previous maps.
We haven't gotten there because we're still debating whether or not we can overturn initiatives.
And so I'm waiting with bated breath to see how Judge Gibson reconciles calling the previous maps gerrymandering, if she does, but then defending the plaintiff's map.
But she's not, right? I feel like what she said right after Christmas is she's saying, I'm going to let the Utah Supreme Court.
That is what she's saying.
Right. I read the whole thing as her being like, I'm kind of over this, right? Yeah. And now it is someone else's job to be talking about it.
Yeah. So what Judge Gibson is saying now is, Supreme Court, you have to decide if a case that isn't finalized yet, with one significant piece outstanding still, if you can go in and weigh in and answer these constitutional questions before this whole other case is finalized. Are you okay with that? And if you are, go forth, my child, right?
Why can't we get a complete final ruling?
Because there are unresolved issues with the case.
Okay.
Counts 5 and counts 16 through 21 are still unresolved.
Right. I think that's ridiculous.
But it's not, because the plaintiff sued over those claims, and so they are entitled to have those claims litigated to their finality.
They are, but Judge Gibson took 13 months to issue her first ruling. Why now are we getting this ruling piecemeal? We're getting it one decision at a time, right? One order at a time, and we still do not have a complete and final ruling from Judge Gibson in this case, even though she has taken all the time in the world.
I guess I don't fully understand how it's supposed to go. Like, you can't just finalize a case when there are claims that haven't been argued yet.
Well, that's the point. The claim should have been argued. There was plenty of time to do that.
Right. But also, I think sometimes the judiciary is not operating on a timeline like this, right? Like, so the answer is there is an election happening in November of next year, right? So the backward design, maybe in some ways, the judiciary is saying we don't actually have to follow, right, that timeline. When we are making decisions, we're not going to do that in a rushed manner.
Yeah, and I think that is the frustration of the legislature, is that all of this could have happened over the summer and early fall, and still here we are, almost to 2026, the end of December, and we don't have a complete and final ruling. We're getting it in piecemeal, a little bit at a time. It's just not the way it should be done, in my opinion.
So what do you think should happen? Should we go back into court and argue what at this point, so we can get a final ruling?
Well, at this point, it's such a mess because it's been done this way that I don't know where we go from here. But the fact that we still have yet to even argue these two outstanding claims, including redistricting.
Yeah, we don't.
Gerrymandering.
We don't know whether the current map is gerrymandering.
There has not been a ruling on gerrymandering in this case.
Right.
Right. And so for me, that seems just on the surface so absurd that this case has been going on now for almost 2 years, and we don't have a final ruling. We don't have a ruling on gerrymandering.
But is it uncommon for cases like this to take so long? I think about our other high-profile cases
in Utah. The judiciary is kind of just doing its own, right? Like, its pace is this pace, and we're just going to live with this map, right? And I think it's the election that's coming that causes the problem. I mean, your point's well taken that she took a very long time.
And she may have a good reason. I'm not an attorney. I'm sure she's a lot smarter than I am. But she knew there was a significant election coming up in 2026. She knew that when she first got this case almost 2 years ago, right? And so the fact that we're in this situation, that because of her timing, we've been boxed into this map, it feels a little bit, well, I'm frustrated, and I know a lot of other Utahns are frustrated.
But also, isn't it kind of in the legislature's best interest for this to go slow? So just hear me out.
Okay.
Because they now thinking about court packing. So then they get a Utah Supreme Court that maybe has more friendly, right?
Textualists.
Members, mm-hmm. Justices, if you will, to their case. So I wonder a little bit, they shouldn't be frustrated.
I've heard some mention of that, right? Like, we'll have three new members when this case is ultimately heard, and how does that change things?
Right, so they can't go fast. They don't want her.
Well, I think adding justices to the court and some of the other things the legislature has done, those are a reaction and a response. Frankly, desperate measures, given the timeline and, you know, the way they've been boxed in here. Had this case been, handled expeditiously, I don't think that we would be seeing legislation to add justices to the court. So I think that's a political response, not necessarily something they were hoping to accomplish, in the beginning.
Well, they were considering justices last session,
right,
too.
Right. It comes up every session.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have as much support.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so the other piece of this is, meanwhile, the GOP is trying to repeal Proposition 4 via gathering signatures. At last check, I didn't actually check before the show. I should have. I apologize for that. But at last check, they had gathered about 15% of their signatures. They need over 140,000. It's going to be due by February 15th. Taylor, you're a pro at initiatives, at gathering signatures. Do you think they're on pace?
They're not on pace. 15% at this stage in the game, when signatures are due mid-February, and we know that those signatures have to be turned in by the witnesses within 30 days of signing, we are just not seeing the volume of signatures nor the geographic distribution that's required here. I just do not see the Republican Party succeeding with the signature gathering.
Do you feel like you've seen, the energy in the campaign to get the signatures? Like, I feel like usually when we see an initiative, right, happening in our state, there's a lot of energy and we are aware of, like, the effort being made on behalf of the people trying to run the initiative. And I don't know, maybe it's just like the holidays, but I have zero awareness, of the GOP out there, right? I don't see things like movie theaters. Or like
I did have a girlfriend text me that someone came to her door. She's like, what do I need to know about this? I was like, how much time you got? Want to talk?
Watch our show.
Can I call you?
Yeah.
Anyone who will talk to me about redistricting, I will talk to.
But that's like the one anecdote I've heard, right, Lindsay? I've not. Usually they're on like our campus, right? They've hired people to stand on campus to get people to sign.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen none of that energy.
The way that this was rolled out was so confusing, so convoluted. The Republican Party was filing a referendum and then an initiative and then withdrawing and then doing another initiative. This has all been such a hot mess. And so confusing to everyone, especially Utah voters who really aren't even tracking this beyond superficially. There is not popular awareness, let alone popular support for this initiative. They have $4 million of out-of-state money to help pay for signature gathering, but there's not enough time, and it is the most difficult time of the year to be doing it.
Yeah, it's hard to gather signatures at Christmas time when you're, busy and traveling and all the things, so... Interesting. Okay, we'll keep an eye on it for sure and keep you updated. Another big story politically here locally is former Congressman Rob Bishop jumping into the race for the state legislature. Of course, he served back in the 70s to the early 90s. Then he went to Congress for almost two decades. Now he wants to finish his career, he tells me, back in the state legislature. Guys, what do you make of the move?
He's retired.
His political career.
Well, I thought he retired from politics when he left Congress. No? He was in the Utah legislature 32 years ago.
Do you officially retire from politics? You're always
officially.
Yeah, you're always kind of involved.
Maybe download X, Rob.
Go golfing.
Find a way to get involved. Work on your golf game. Hang out with your grandkids.
But if he becomes a state legislator, and he's... he was there, what did you say, 30 years ago?
70s to the 90s.
Yeah,
so that's 20 years. Does he carry that seniority with him?
No.
Okay, so he doesn't roll into committees and he's like the chair of everything he wants to do as a result of that?
Well, I don't know the inner workings and the personal relationships between Rob Bishop and, say, Speaker Mike Schultz. They might be close friends. They may not be. I don't know that all legislators will be excited to have Roth.
Okay, but what happens when you have a room named after you at the state legislature, and then you come back to the state legislature? Can't you just be like,
that room for
look
me?
At no, the Rob Bishop room?
You don't have to schedule a room for me. You right? obviously have one for
in.
Anything. Yeah, it's your room.
I'm just saying, doesn't that instantly give you some clout? Like,
so I guess that was my question. Kind of was. If he becomes, and it's he would be Matt Gwynn's replacement, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a legislator up in my area. So part of what I was thinking was, well, that's fantastic, right? Because Northern Utah gets, you know, a giant political person coming into the legislature. That has to be good, right? But what I hear you saying is maybe no. Like, he's not
bringing
that seniority.
I don't
know. People might not like him.
Rob is a very conservative Republican. He was conservative in the Utah House. He was conservative in Congress. And he was effective, reasonably so, in Congress. You know, he wasn't necessarily just a political ideologue, right, who would just talk a lot but not do anything. We all know who that is, mm-hmm. representing Utah, right? Mm-hmm. Rob Bishop was effective. He did a lot on natural resources. His background is education, so he definitely brings a lot to the table. I just can't imagine why he would do this. He must be a really bad golfer. He must have, like, really poorly behaved grandkids. I'm not sure why, Rob, but good
well,
luck.
Well, he talked to
welcome.
Me about yeah. some issues locally that he feels are not resolved. I don't know if they will ever be resolved, but things like cost of living, education, he did mention, right? He actually talked about how he feels like teachers are too regulated
right
now.
In your story, I was like, well, I would like that, right?
Yeah.
So if he rolled in there and was like, how about we not tell teachers what to say and what to do in the classroom?
Yeah.
That would be good.
How is that going to fly in the Utah House?
And I asked him about that, too. I asked him about the House kind of feeling more... I said conservative, and he goes, well, I'm the most conservative person out there. What I meant was sort of populist, right? Yeah. And I also used words like, you know, they seem more extreme. They seem a little bit more, and I don't mean these as pejorative, but that's just kind of the leaning of the Utah House of Representatives in recent years. And he sort of dismissed that, and he just, you know, was kind of like, I believe in my issues, and I'll do them.
I think that's a really important point, though, that you make, Lindsay.
Yeah.
You know, our Utah legislature, many could argue that it has moved significantly to the right. Mm-hmm. Although I might agree that the Utah House has not necessarily become more conservative. It's become more populist.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's been a national trend.
It's a different axis.
Yeah. That is a national trend in the Republican Party, right? We are seeing more populism over conservatism. Rob Bishop is a true traditional conservative. Fiscal conservative. He's not a populist. So that will be potentially an important voice in the Utah House. I think the question is, how will other members of the House respond to someone who was Speaker of the House 32 years ago and just retired from Congress?
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry.
No,
he also told you he would only run through the convention.
Yes. He will not gather signatures.
Right. So another question I have is, what are the odds he is the candidate coming out of the convention?
Strong.
Well, I wonder if he freezes the field just by nature of his name, right? Is anyone going to challenge Rob Bishop in House District 6?
Well, we don't know who the delegates will be technically. The Republican Party will be electing new state and county delegates in March at caucus meetings. You know, Rob Bishop could definitely have an impact on pushing his supporters to become delegates. But, you know, we can't really predict how they'll vote because they haven't been elected yet.
Do you see him, Taylor, as a... I mean, he is a staunch convention guy. Do you see him as a threat to SB 54?
No.
There it is.
Okay.
Yeah. But we have seen what can happen to candidates who are well qualified for office, but fail to gather signatures. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, that's a roll of the dice.
Yeah.
Remind me how old he is.
74, I want to say.
Okay. Do we feel like this starts any kind of conversation about age limits for people running for office? Has anyone been discussing, you know, like we've got some really young
Who's
people.
Older in the state legislature? How old is Jerry Stevenson?
Good question.
How old is Don Ibsen?
Jerry won't be running again, though.
Right.
That's essentially a very poorly kept secret.
Right.
Carol Spackman Moss is also stepping down, not running again. So many of our kind of senior legislators, age-wise, are announcing that they're not running again. Mm-hmm. So Rob would definitely be one of the more aged, experienced, senior members, especially of the Utah House.
Yeah.
Right. And I was just thinking after the Biden experience, right? Like, so we have someone who the country decides is far too old to run. He steps down. I'm just wondering to what extent age plays, do you know what I mean, is more present in a way that it hadn't been, you know, previously.
That's a good question. And here in Utah, where we have a citizen legislature that meets 45 days full time every year, January to March, you know, a retired person like Rob, who is, you know, collecting benefits and Social Security from his previous positions, he is perhaps really well suited to being a legislator because he doesn't have a day job. He's retired from real work. And so, you know, he is free, has a lot of free time, obviously, and has decided he wants to spend it as a Utah legislator. So bless your heart, Rob.
He pushed back our interview because he had a work meeting. So maybe he is still working in some capacity.
Okay, fair point.
Just, I don't know. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I found that really interesting. I got a tip the other day that, you know, he was going to jump in, and I thought, and I even asked him, you know, why not, you know, we have an open governor seat in 28. We have, you know, Mike Lee, who's up for re-election in 2026. Why not one of these federal offices? And he just said, you know, local government is where it matters. It's where, and he really wants to, he talked about, you know, the relation, the federalism that he believes in, right? In getting the states more power away from the federal government. He believes that on a local level too, getting local governments more, you know, attention and funding and you know, government closest to the people, more attention.
Let me make this point. Rob Bishop is one of the only Republicans in Utah history that has used the position as Speaker of the House in Utah as a platform to successfully win election for Congress.
There is a speaker complex here.
There is.
Right?
And none of them succeed except for Rob Bishop. Rob Bishop is the exception. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you this. Someone who has gone from the legislature as a springboard to larger office knows how to do it. I would not rule out any office for Rob Bishop in 2028 if he's in the legislature in 2026.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. I didn't think through that.
So a little bit right there.
He did tell me it wasn't like a lifelong thing for him. It was two or three terms, I think he said. One or two terms, something like that.
Interesting. Well, you know, one term and then run for governor.
But he's like, and maybe I'm totally wrong. Like, right, it's Philip Rivers who's playing right now for Indianapolis Colts. So maybe having someone come out of retirement, but your point right there, I didn't even think of, Taylor, that does keep him relevant, right, in a way that he maybe not has been. And if there are issues he cares about, this is the best way to be speaking to them.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, Rivers can't be on the Hall of Fame ballot for 5 more years, but he does get to get NFL health care.
That's right. He gets
for his very large family for 5 years. So smart move by Rivers.
Okay, we have to wrap up, but I want you each in your final like 2 seconds, give me your best New Year's resolution for state leaders in Utah. Happy 2026, everybody. Give me something you want to see the legislature improve on, work on, do a resolution.
All right, I'll jump out under the bus here.
Go.
The Utah legislature is the most powerful branch of Utah government. No question about it, but they have not wielded that power effectively, especially this year. My resolution in 2026 for the Utah legislature is to do a much, much better job at public relations.
You just want to get hired.
I mean, I could help them. I'm not looking for a job here, but I could help them.
Definitely not looking to be hired. My resolution for the state legislature is to come in under 500 bills passed.
Oh, I like
not
that.
Not going to happen, Leah. Don't even.
As one who has to cover them, I really like that resolution.
Said realistic resolutions, Leah. And I would like to be a billionaire in 2026.
That's your resolution.
Neither are going to happen.
Okay. Well, my resolution is just let me sleep at night. Like, I don't know. I just...
No midnight
they keep me busy. Yeah, they keep me busy. That's for sure. All right. We appreciate you both. Happy New Year to both of you. Taylor Morgan, Leah Murray, thanks for being here. Always appreciate your insights and your opinions. And don't forget to watch Inside Utah Politics this week. We'll have a best of episode for you so you can catch up on the latest episode on ABC4 at 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. And we will see you next time. ¶¶